Welcome to the Feast of Tabernacles, 2008 for us and at this site. Am I speaking loud enough for everybody here?
Yes.
I got a pretty loud voice, so, you know, he has to muffle it when he records it, but we'll get there. First day of the Feast of Tabernacles, and this is what this is, the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, correct? All right, it's one of the yearly times that are called Holy Convocation. And there are how many in this particular month?
Three.
Four. Did you know?
I did.
Okay, so when we think about the Feast of Tabernacles and this very beginning of the feast, and this is feast number third one in the series, and this has to do with the Feast of Tabernacles. Why is it that God has said, I want the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles to be a holy convocation? You can answer the question. Speak up.
Well, because I'm probably pretty tired if everybody's coming in from all sorts of locations.
Tired. All right.
Well, the market is important.
You have to speak louder so I can hear.
Mark it as important so that we know that we're starting something serious.
Something? Okay, good. Yes, Ellie?
In ancient Israel, this was the most special, one of the most special days of the year because the people stayed up all night long and danced, and there is good reason to think that the Messiah was born on this day.
Okay. Any other comments? Now, what we're going to do today, this is actually part one, so if you're not here tomorrow, you missed part number two. I'm sorry. I couldn't cram it all in once. But this is sometimes when we think about the Feast of Tabernacles, we have an idea of what it could mean. Now, biblically, it's a very fascinating first day. All right, and it has to center in on two very main things. We know this much from the Feast of Trumpets, that the great sound of God is going to come, and there's going to be great trials, great tribulations, and day of clouds of gloominess and darkness, just like it says. Then we know a few days later, not a few days later, we just know that the Day of Atonement comes. And we went through the Day of Atonement at our place, and it's one of the biggest blessings and hopes for all mankind is the Day of Atonement. Without it, there is no Feast of Tabernacles for those who do not have and cannot receive or be part of the Feast of Sukkot. And the Feast of Trumpet is really what God has said, I am going to be the terrorist of the world. He's going to terrify and frighten people, and in order for that, they will do something. And they will change their way of thinking, change their way of life, change their way of everything. They don't know what to do yet. They have no idea. They don't know what to repent of. The first thing they do is are scared, and God said he was going to do. What's the commandment say? And the commandment, the words that God saith? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, right? So the first thing that God's going to do, the Feast of Trumpets, which pictures, not judgment, it is a sentence of the judgment that already has happened. He brings it about. Now, the Messiah said that the Torah holds three main ingredients, the weightier matters of the Torah. Do you mind what they are?
Judgment, mercy, and faith.
Judgment, mercy, and faith. Now, what happens when he comes through? The judgment, quote, the sentence that's going to take place, is pictured in the Feast of Trumpets. And from there, then comes what? Mercy. There is where the Day of Atonement comes in. Now, mercy is going to be granted to thousands and thousands and perhaps millions. We don't know. God has a count. Who will actually go into what's called grace. We call it in the Christian world, right? Well, it's also the biblical terminology. And you find favor. God then begins to get favor because now something is going to take place in your world, and not your world, but in their world. Because we're talking about the Feast of Tabernacles, which gave forth what? What was the last statement? Faith. Now, sometimes we don't look at the Feast of Tabernacles as the realm of faith. We look at it in the realm of This is what we do. We go out to Sukkot. We come and we celebrate and we rejoice. And we have all these wonderful things we do. Wonderful food. You can eat as much as you want, right? Whatever you so desire to have to consume during the Feast of Tabernacles, God says you can do so. That includes wine and strong drink, whatever that means. But, well, we all have our own thoughts about what all that means. But you understand what I'm saying? Faith is going to bring forth something, a great blessing for all mankind. It's not just by what I believe. What did the Apostle Paul, James, say? My actions prove my faith. So what you'll be doing, the Feast of Tabernacles, is a piece of evidence before the Creator and everybody around about you that your actions are based upon something called faith. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this. It'd be a stupid thing to do, right? So Feast of Tabernacles does center around the concept of faith. We have the judgment. Then we have the mercy, Day of Atonement. Now we have faith. And the whole world is going to learn. And we will be part of the teaching of the whole world of what this month stands for. What the first day of the month stands for. What the 10th day of the month stands for. What the 15th day of the month stands for. Because without that, we have nothing. So we have to have a more complete understanding of what this day, today, first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, or Sukkot, is really all about. It's not so much being in the wilderness. It's not so much being in your own tent. Yes, I know what Apostle Paul says and Apostle Peter said. I'll cover that sometime later. But yeah, it is a temporary thing we are doing right now. But when the temple of the living God, when the tabernacle of the living God comes, it's not going to be temporary. It's going to be permanent. And we should be part, and we are a part, in a sense, if we have faith, all right, and we have faith because we're participating in something that is an act of faith, not just an act of belief, act of faith. Actions bring forth. You understand what I'm saying so far? All right? Hope I haven't lost anybody in this. So... So this day is a very important day. It is a day in which you yourself today are acting, participating in faith. All right? Now, let's go a little farther. What is so important about this first day of the Feast of Tabernacles? Well, it's the beginning of a calling. Oh, wait a minute. I'm already here. Put yourself out of it. You're already here. But it's the beginning of a calling. And we'll talk about the calling. That is a calling. Remember, we went through the lulav. Calling of those from the east. Calling of those from the south. Calling those from the west. Calling those from the north. I don't think where I was at. But it is an action taking place. All of us have come from different areas. Some of us have come from the east and the north, south, and west. And here we are. We're at the calling. We are presenting. So these people who are going to be brought in, and you'll be part of helping them to have and act upon what I would call faith. Because they've gone through the tribulation, or they've gone through the Feast of Trumpets. They've gone through the judgment that took place. And then they go into the act of mercy. Granted unto them. Now remember, God grants mercy not based upon anything except what He bases it on. We may disagree internally why God would grant mercy upon somebody. None of our business. It's totally His. Because if you remember the Day of Atonement, there are three things that are being removed. What are they?
Sin, transgression, and iniquity.
And iniquity. All three things. We may not like someone who commits iniquity to be there. Not our say-so. It is God's, and God's only. It is a time of a calling. We'll talk about the calling of nations and calling of up to the mountain of Yahweh. Unto the house of our banner we have out there in the first entry. Come down. It says, come, let's go up unto the mountain of Yahweh. We're going to a government. We're going to a place to find out how God is, what God wants to do in our lives. All right? After great turmoil, describe the book of Revelation of the prophets and many, many teachings of what's going to take place. Then a new beginning will begin for the whole world. The whole world will have a whole new beginning. It will end. That is the trial, the tribulation is coming here. It will come to pass. A great new beginning. Not of all nations will respond. Not all nations, not all people will respond. After all the calamity is finished, not all nations will respond. What are we supposed to do then? Teach them. Show them. Lead them. Guide them. And by your life today, by your life, if you have in the past, and the life you're going to have in the future, walking in this direction, is going to be the biggest piece of evidence of your faith to them. And they will have tremendous amount of assurance. You're there, you're going to be there to give them tremendous amount of courage, tremendous amount of insight. You're not going to be there to judge them, condemn them, and damn them. All you're going to be there is to lead them unto the Creator. Yes, Bill?
Are they going to be coming to us, or do we go out?
That'll be up to God where He's going to. Some of us may be, I don't know. Some of us, I would say yes, but that's His order, not ours. Yeah. I have no idea where He's going to send anybody. I'm not in charge, thank God. I'd be all confused. Slightest idea what to do. Since God knows your mind, your heart, and your soul, He knows exactly what to do. Me, I'm saying, huh? You know, so I don't know. I'm glad I'm a huh. I don't know what's going on, all right? Okay, now, talk back in. This day is the day of a great, of a holy convocation. And there's two things scripturally we will go in, not today, when I speak about this tomorrow, has to do with the king and the high priest. Combination of two things. We'll talk about that tomorrow, because I won't be able to fulfill it today. Otherwise, you'll have to get up and leave, because it'll take too long. I'm going to begin in an unusual location. Because during the Feast of Tabernacles, there's a requirement of so many animals to be sacrificed per day for different reasons, for different occasions. To be able to get a picture of what this all is about, we're going to go back a little bit farther. We're going to go back to Numbers, the 7th chapter. A very interesting chapter. Because one way, Numbers, the 7th chapter, reflects you and me. Reflects what we are doing now. What we are being prepared for now. All right? Not what will be, but what is. It's a very interesting chapter. And it's a fascinating of it by itself because certain things are to be done. Numbers chapter 1. I'm sorry, Numbers 7, verse 1. It came to pass that Moses had fulfilled and fully set up the tabernacle and had anointed it and sanctified it and all the instruments thereof, both altar and the vessels thereof, and had anointed them and sanctified them. That's all written in the last chapter of the book of Exodus on the procedure and how he did it. You can be on your own, look back in there, and know the procedure and how he did it, how long it took him, and what his functions were. It's quite in detail of what he did. That kind of paycheck, that noise in the back, I know. Hope I'm speaking above it. Verse 2. Now it says, and the princes of Israel, the heads of the house of their fathers, who were the princes of the tribes, and were over them that numbered, offered something. Now we have 12 tribes of Israel, right? The 12 tribes of Israel and the princes, that is the leadership, the ones who are to be the leaders going forth, they are to represent something. They represent what? Their tribe. Just like we have the President of the United States represents what? Supposed to represent the people of the United States of America, right? When an ambassador goes overseas to represent, not himself, right, but represents the country or his president, whomever he is working for. He does not represent himself. And so we're looking here at the leadership here, and we come forth, they are representation. They represent the leadership of each one of the tribes. Now, certain functions that they did, we'll read this for a moment. And they brought their offering, verse 3, they brought their offering before Yahweh, 6 covered wagons, 12 oxen, a wagon of two for the priests of the prince, and for each one an ox. And they brought them before the tabernacle. And Yahweh spoke unto Moses, saying, take of it, that they may be to do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, and thou shalt give them unto the Levites, to every man according to his service. So these wagons that came in, the products that came in, that had things were in them that were certain items. And then now they were given to the Levites, that is certain Levites. Only two of the brass Levites received these goods. One of them had to carry the burden. One of them did not get a wagon. They didn't get anything to carry their load on. They had to carry it themselves. You remember who's supposed to carry that? You know, the cover of the ark? They can't have it on a wagon. They must walk with it constantly. So they are the primary ones that are doing the load, or they're doing the carrying what we would call the Ark of the Covenant. They're carrying the commandments of God. They're carrying those things, and they must carry them, and they don't get any help from any animal or any wagon or any sheep or anything. They get nothing. Their job is a different kind of function than the other two. The other two carry the load of the, or carry the cloths and carry the frame, but the certain section of the Levites do not get to carry that. They carry the things that are holy unto God, and they are not to have it on a wagon. No animal is to be part of carrying it away. Only them, mankind, is to take it away. Which is a representation, by the way, of one of the functions. Each one of the functions of these Levites, by the way, is a function of the Messiah. The function of what the high priest is supposed to do. High priest is in charge of all one of these three functions. And he does them. So the high priest, your Messiah, carries something on him. You know what he carries? The Ark of the Covenant. With him at all times. Verse 10. Chapter 7, verse 10. And the princes offered the dedications of the altar in the day that it was anointed. Excuse me. Even the princes offered their offerings before the altar. And it's very important to know something different about this. Moses already sanctified the tabernacle, right? And everything within the tabernacle. But there's one thing that needed yet to be sanctified by the leaders of each one of the tribes. And that is the altar. Now, what we are, I said this kind of represent, look back on our lives and knowing that we are to present something upon the altar. Now, we have physical things that are be here, and the physical things can kind of distract on the purpose behind it all. Let's take a look at it. As we go through this, you find out that these men took a long time to do their job. Yes.
It's blue right there.
Oh, what happened to my nose here? You know how long it took to sanctify the altar? 12 days. 12 days to sanctify the altar. That tells us something about God has in mind for us. We have a journey to do. We have a task to do. We ourselves, we have a job to do, and it's not do it when you want to do it. You do it according to the order which the Messiah has said, written forth here through Moses. Verse 11, and Yahweh said to Moses, they shall offer their offering, each prince on his day, the dedication of the altar. And he that offers his offering on the first day was Nashon, the son of Amminadab, of the tribe of Judah. So Judah's the first one in line to do the functioning, do the offering. Nobody else does it. He does it first. Right? We get this picture. Of course, we know why Judah, right? Because the Messiah was going to come out of that tribe. Doesn't tell you that, but we know from past, we're looking here, oh, this is why Judah comes first, because the Messiah is going to come from and out of the house of Judah. So the primary function is to do what? What you got to do is offer something. We'll go through some of the details in a minute. And he offers one silver charger, or one silver plate, and the weight of it was 130 shekels, which is only about 5.36 pounds. It's not a very heavy plate. And one silver bowl was 70 shekels, which is about approximately two and a half, maybe three pounds bowl. So you have a plate. It's got a curve. It's not a flat plate, by the way. It's got a curvature in it, like you would have in your own home. When you put food on your plate, it's kind of raised on the edges so your food won't go inside. Same way, it's the same with the kind of hair. That's why it was bigger, much bigger. Then there was a bowl, of course. We all have bowls. Little bowls are about. Put things inside of them, and we'll find out what they are. And then there was a thing of, and after that, a shekel of shilling, both of them full of flour, mingled, fine flour, mingled with oil for a minhah offering. So now there's one plate that's bigger, but it's got minhah offering in it. And there's also a bowl that's got a minhah offering. So there's two things that must be taking place. I'm not going to go into detail exactly what they're, what, when they use them or how they use them. I just want to get you a picture of what a minhah, what a minhah is. What is a minhah? How many know? It's a measured part. All minhah is a measured part of things. And when you read about in detail of how much flour, how much oil, and how much frankincense you put in it, it's precise. So it's a measured device. So minhah is a measured amount, precise amount. And there's a certain amount to be measured for each one of the animals. One different kind, different type for the bull, different amount for the lamb, and a different amount for the goat. Each one has a different amount. All right, so... Well, I want to go into this one here. And the spoon, verse 11, but it's full of incense. It's only about 5 ounces. It's a very, very light spoon. 5 ounces. By the way, don't lick up our spoons. Because the word comes from the hand, cupped hand. So it's like the arm out here, and that was called a spoon. Okay, it's got an interesting word to know, but it came from the word of the hand, cupped, the hand being cupped, and within that hand held the incense. Interesting, isn't it, to know that that's where it comes from? I found that was interesting. Okay, now what this person is supposed to do, verse 17, he is to offer one bullock, one ram, one lamb, of the first year for a whole offering. It's completely burned up and consumed. One kid goat for a sin offering. for a peace offering, two ox, we'll get in that word later, 5 rams, 5 goats, 5 lambs of the first year. And this is the offering of Nashon, the son of Amminadab. Now it happened the first day. So the first tribe does this first. It goes through a process. And it's a very long process, by the way. It's why it would last all day long. There's an awful lot of things to offer. It's not from him, the man. It's from the tribe. So it wasn't just him that gave these things. He represents the tribe. And they're from the tribe, from his family, the family of Judah. The people that was part of Judah, they were the ones that are bringing these things in. And these are precisely what they're supposed to bring in. And what the measurement was. Precisely. Did you notice very fascinating? That's precise count. Precise amount. We'll go through this quickly. The second day, verse 18, Nathaniel, the son of Zuah, the prince of Issachar, did offer. It's the same exact identical amount. He didn't give more. He didn't give less. It's precisely the same amount. All right? That was day number two. Verse 24, day number three. Inabob, the son of Nihalon, the prince of the children of Zebulun. What did he do? Offer the very same thing in the very same exact identical manner, one at the very third day. It took all day. Now, to make a long story short, what is this telling you? Why is it that each tribe must offer precisely the same amount, nothing less and nothing more?
Part of the same event.
Same event. Okay.
All part of it.
One is not above the others. They're the same.
Any more comments?
The
lulav.
I don't know what it was called. Earlier, the thing we did out there with the leaves and stuff, and the lemon.
Right now?
Does that have to do with anything?
Oh, no, not right now. No. We'll get there. I'll lead to that in a minute. What I'm trying to get at the point is, at the verse 7, chapter 7, I want you to pay attention that the first thing that God deals with is not the world. Not the 70 nations, not the 70 bulls, but how many bulls does he take? Well, let's look at the end of the chapter. We'll find out how many. The fifth day, fourth day, seventh day, all the way to Moscow. The tenth day, let's see, the 11th, 12th day. Oh, go drop all the way down to verse 84. So it's quite a bit which the house of Israel is to offer. It outnumbers that which was to be offered at the Feast of Sukkot. All right? Verse 84, and this is a dedication of the altar. Remember, I told you, this is now the altar is now being dedicated. And on this altar was whole offering, Minha offering, the sin offering, and the peace offering. Right? All three of those are the ones that were given and provided for, and each one of the Israelites have to go through a process. All right, before we continue on, what is the object of a whole offering? Why is there such a thing as a whole offering? Everything's been in a holocaust. Everything's being burned up. What is it telling you to God? Or what is God saying to you, what I want?
You're giving something to him which will give you no obvious benefit.
Obvious, there's nothing. You get nothing in return. He gets it all. He blessed you with it. Now you have to give back to it. And by the way, you don't get to pick who you want. You got to pick the best on the whole offer. Yes.
And it's costly to you.
It's a cost issue. It's an expensive issue. Expensive thing. So in your world, in your life, there are things that you must offer up in a holy offering that is complete, given unto God. And he gets it all. And it should be, in a sense, expensive. Not cheap. Because in the prophets, when the Israelites or when the Levites were taking the cheap things, what happened? They got a curse. It's like if you went before, I know you may not like this guy, but if you went before the President of the United States and you're going to give him a gift, would you give him the worst bottle of wine?
Yeah.
Or would you do the best you could possibly come up with? You see, to honor that office, you should bring the best. And it's going to cost you, by the way. It may cost you $500,000 for the best bottle of wine you ever paid for, but you give it to the leadership of the country. The same relationship, that's what God has in mind. Don't give him a piece of junk. Give him the best that you have to offer. And so that's what the Israelites had to do. All right, what's the function of a... Well, we'll get the sin offering, but what's the function of peace offering? I'm kind of out of order here, but what's the function of peace offering? The shalom offering.
To basically celebrate the fact that you and God are at peace.
Right. That's the simplicity of the matter, is that you and God are at peace. He is with you and you are with him. That's what the Shalom offering is all about. But you have to give us something else instead. You have to give what's called a sin offering. There comes the goat. You're fully acknowledging it's only one goat. That life of that goat is taken because of sin. So every holy day, there is a goat given to remember that this is the cost that God paid. Because the goat represents the Messiah here, as we know from the Day of Atonement. Right? Then you are shalom with God. You're at peace with God. He is satisfied with it because you gave of the best you had, and he gave of the best he had. You know, that you may have life. Drop down to verse 87. And the oxen, by the way, the word oxen, by the way, many of you people have that in your Bible. The word oxen does not mean an animal, or a specific animal. It's a group or a collection of different types of animals. It's not just what we think on today of what we think of as an oxen. And to prove it here, look at what page 87 says, verse 87. And it says, this is Old English. All right, I'm reading Old English. All the oxen of the whole offering were, 12 bullocks, the rams 12, the lambs of the first year 12, and the meat offering and the kid offering and the sin offering were 12. So it's an awful lot, right? So every one of the tribes had to do an awful lot of giving up. But they were uniting themselves with something. They were sanctifying something. What were they sanctifying?
The altar.
The altar. And when they sanctified the altar, what does that make them? What?
Sanctified.
That makes them sanctified. That's the whole purpose of the entire time of the 7th chapter of Numbers, is they were all sanctified. And when the altar was sanctified, they were sanctified. So what I'm saying today is that when we look at chapter 7, which seems like it's, why did it do that for? It's to let you know and I know, for us to know, that God said, this is how I sanctify, this is how you are to be sanctified. You do certain actions, I do certain actions. Each tribe does a certain action, and I will do action on each tribe, not one be left out. I will deal with Israel first. We know that from prophecy, right? I'll deal with Israel first. Once I deal with Israel, then where is he going to go? To the nations abroad. So, the question is, this is sanctification, by the way, of the tabernacle, where the tent was made. It was in the second year. Beginning of the second year, which the tabernacle was sanctified by Moses. And soon thereafter, the sanctification of the sanctuary. Now, what's the first month? What's the second month? First month has to do with what?
The spring, the barley.
The barley has to do with Passover, has to do with all the things that we associate with. But what took place at this particular point in time, the second tabernacle, when? I do not know when. But an awful lot of things for that altar to be sacrificed, and it took 12 long days. It never has happened again in history. Once it's been done, it wasn't done again. So once you have been sanctified by God, when you have repented and you've gone through your trial, you heard the blowing of the trumpet, and you were terrified, you were frightened, and you responded and you asked for mercy, for God to grant you mercy, for God to forgive you. Then you got what's called the Day of Atonement. He granted you mercy. And then what you do from that point on, now you start acting upon what he tells you to do, right? We got that picture in the seventh month. But for the house of Israel, much sooner. We need to be prepared before the rest of the world. And that's what we're here for. We're here to learn and to walk in righteousness and truth. We establish now the law. How do you establish the law? You are doing it today. Because why? You have faith. Because you know what justice is. First thing is mentioned is justice. Judgment comes. When justice is there, judgment has come. Correct? You can't have justice without judgment. A judgment had to come. Then, therefore, justice comes alive. It does its job. And when you have been sentenced and I have been sentenced, then we only have one option. Ask for mercy. So spiritually speaking, we get a day of atonement. Maybe it happened at a different period of your life or times, each one of you here. But the picture of you having great mercy is a day of atonement. And then what you do after that? Now, an awful lot of people don't continue after they've been baptized. They don't walk in faith. What I mean by that, the actions do not reveal their faith. That's a serious thing, isn't it? And we are all learning in our lives, many years some of us have been around, this is not a one-time shot deal. Your actions must be always present. Why? Because you know you received mercy. And now you want to institute and follow whatever the Word of God has to say. Because it's not just life, it is life. When we walk in faith, and the feast for us right now, the Feast of Shavuot, is walking in faith, is because we believe and we are establishing the Word of God the best way we know how, in the flesh. And we're here trying to do the very same thing, right? We may not have the picture. We only have a little bit of the picture of what's going on. But all of them by itself, this day is important. Because it really is one of the days of the big picture of faith. Do you understand what I'm saying so far? Hope I haven't lost anybody so far. So I want you to understand that a little bit about all these things, which seems very boring to go through the seventh chapter of Numbers, because it really doesn't relate to us. I want to tell you, I want to make sure that you understand that it should relate to you, because it does. The best way I can tell you. If we are the house of Israel by birth or by spirit or adoption or any other term you want to use, makes no difference. We're being dealt with first. And the function for us to be dealt with first is to be able to give unto the world what God has given unto us. We're going to have a big, 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 big job to do. We know the book of Revelation, at least it takes 1,000 years to do that job. Can you endure that long? It's a lot of task, a lot of work. So as we live through this world, now we know this much, we'll have one big, huge advantage. We'll get smart in a short period of time when the resurrection takes place. Now, we don't know how long that's going to last. It'll probably start educating us, telling us this is what we need to do, and how we act, and how we teach people, and how we lead them. That's something that we'll have to learn, because that's not our job right now. Our job right now is to establish in our lives faith. And every action you do must be based upon that. That's why the just shall live by faith. It's not just a phrase. It's what you do. And you are, Book of Romans, you all know it, to come, and we are to establish the laws of God. Institute them in our lives. Institute them in our very being. And the prophecy is very clear. I will give them a new covenant. What is it? I will plant it in their minds first, and our hearts secondly. when the commandments of God, and he said they're write them in the mind, it's going to be there. Once it's established in your mind, then it will be established within your heart, because your mind's not going to go with your heart if it's going the wrong direction. If God fails, which we know he doesn't do that, if he fails to establish what he said he's going to do first, the law in the mind, and he says, oh, I didn't mean that, I'm going to establish in the heart first, oh, I got to go back to this, God's not mixed up. He knows exactly where to go. He knows exactly why, because he's the creator, right? He knows when and where and how. And the reason why the fear of the Lord does something, what is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of?
Knowledge.
Knowledge. Wisdom is also a clue, but it's a little later, but first we'll look at knowledge. Now, it means knowledge of what? Oh, I know how to read and write. No, knowledge of the Creator himself. And like Moses, we should quake and tremble when we first heard and know. And then as Moses, 40 years later, was able to talk to God on a one-to-one basis, we, as years go by, should be able to talk to God on a one-to-one basis. Total, whatever, respect. But be able to talk with him. And many of you know, you can pray for something very small, and there it is for you, because God says, okay, I'll fulfill that. So, I'm going to try to end this real quickly, but we're going to go to Numbers, the 29th chapter. This is where it involves something very important. I'll try to go through this relatively quick. Numbers, 29th chapter. And this is talking about the seventh month. This whole chapter is about the seventh month. It's not just the chapter of some holy days. This whole chapter is about the seventh month, what happens and what takes place in the seventh month, which we have learned is the latter portion of the actions of the Creator. Right? In the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall know no serve our work. It is a day of the blowing of the trumpets unto you. Did you get the blowing of the trumpets unto you? It's tempting that you blow, and it's unto you for you to hear something. Now remember the Mount Sinai? What did they hear? Sound of one trumpet going louder and louder and louder and louder. So that's not the only time God speaks. But that's the first big one. What the big sound there. And if that put on, now we know from the prophets are the ones to lift up their voices like the sound of a trumpet. So now we start listening, not just to the trumpet or the shofar or anything else. We're saying, listen to the trumpets. We're talking, listen to the prophets. Pay attention. What's the purpose of blowing the trumpets, Jeff?
Pay attention.
He said that the first day, so I'm going to keep going on that one. A very, very cool statement, right? Pay attention. All right, so we have to pay attention. But it's to us. For the prophets are not written for the world. They're written for us today. For us to know and understand God today. How God thinks, how God acts, how God responds. And the reason why we walk in the way we're walking is because we have faith that the prophets, the warning and the blowing of the trumpets is true for us. First. And then the world. There's a lot of blowing the trumpets, or should I say the prophets, aimed at certain nations of the world. That's true. But 99% of those prophets are for the house of Israel. Take a look at them. Notice them. Let's drop down. I'm not going to go through that point. Let's go to verse 12. on the 15th day of the month, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work, and you shall keep the feast unto Yahweh 7 days. You shall offer a whole offering, a sacrifice made by fire, a sweet aroma unto Yahweh. 13 young bulls, or bullocks, 2 rams, 14 lambs of the first year, and they shall be without blemish. You know what that means, don't you? They shall be clean, holy, perfect. You know, I'm not a farmer, nor am I a cattleman, nor am I a sheepman. What's the other one? Or one that keeps goats. I haven't got the slightest idea what it means to be. Get the best one out and without blemish. Hey, you really have to look. We know the story about the red heifer. It's a really difficult one to find that everything about it is red. It's probably more rare than I know. Because I'm not in that kind of world. But maybe. Remember, this comes from all of Israel. Not just coming from one tribe here. We're talking about the Feast of Tabernacles. It comes from the entire group. All of Israel now is coming here. And they're offering all these 13 bulls. I'm not going to continue on reading. Now let's go down here now to verse 17. On the second day, you shall offer 12 young bullocks. I know the number dropped down. Everything else precisely the same number. But now the bullocks drop one by one every day. Now, have you ever wondered why? Okay. Let's go down to verse 20. And on the third day, 11 bullocks, 2 rams and 14 lambs, and of the first year without blemish, and all the men offering all those things, and a sin offering, by the way. You have to have a goat for sin offering every single day of the Feast of Tabernacles to acknowledge where sin came from and how it's been eliminated and the price that the Creator had made to eliminate it out of your life and out of anybody else's life. Fourth day, verse 23. There'll be 10 bullocks, 2 rams, and so on and so forth. Verse 26. Fifth day, be 9. See, no going down, but one by one by one by one. Sixth day, there'll be, verse 29, there'll be 8 bullocks. Bullock, by the way, is a bull, male bull of the first year, or within the first year. That's what it boils down to. So as you know, right off. This is Old English I'm reading from. Yours probably says something different. All right. On the seventh day, 7 bullocks. Perfect number. How many bullocks are there? Total. They've been killed.
70.
What does that mean?
Number.
Why 70? Sorry, what?
Number of the Gentile nations.
Where do you get that from?
The book of
God. During the time of
Noah?
Correct, there you go. After the flood, there are specifically 70 nations mentioned. There's where you get the Pacific 70 nations. The whole world. Now, God has a sequence. Remember if we first read there in chapter 7? This is the order. Each tribe on the order, precise method, preciseness. Now, as we come along here in the Feast of Shavuot, we're seeing that there is 13 brought in on the first day. But the remainder of the other offerings remain the same number. That's what the nations are to bring in. Those nations will bring it in. There's 13 of them, but they will bring in the total number. Spiritually speaking, they'll bring in. They will have a sin offering. They will understand what the fear of the Lord is all about. They'll have a complete picture, because you know why? They've already gone through the Feast of Trumpets. These nations are going to be terrified. And the only way they're going to get out of being terrified is to ask God for mercy. They're going to have a Day of Atonement. And then when it comes to Shavuot and the offer, the goat for sin offering, they'll know exactly what it's all about. They'll have a reason behind it. They'll know it's because of the Messiah. Now, that'll be our functions, to stop and think about what goes on. So, I've not completely answered the question. We'll do that tomorrow morning. More on in more detail. There's something very, very important about why this day is what we have read so far, according to Torah, certain things, right? We learned some things about all the offerings in a nutshell, in a close nutshell. But there's very one very, very vital thing that has yet to be occurred. And when we read this, we'll understand what the Torah says, why this day is the most important day of the Feast of Shavuot over the rest that come.